This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by a leader in revenue cycle. We're joined by Sherry Liebel. Sherry's the Executive Director of Revenue Cycle at CentraCare in Minnesota. We're going to talk about trends in revenue cycle, career, priorities, and a little bit more. Sherry, can you take a moment to introduce yourself?
Yes, I am Sherry Liebel. I am the Executive Director of Revenue Cycle for CentraCare in St. Cloud, Minnesota, serving central Minnesota.
And is St. Cloud, how cold does it get in winter? Is it totally livable or is it freezing when it gets to winter?
It's totally livable. However, if you're not used to snow and temperatures that can dip below zero, it can be unbearable. But we are hardy souls in Minnesota, so it's all doable.
Well, on a different podcast, I'll ask you about trends in weather, but here I'm going to move towards revenue cycle. So thank you very much for indulging me for a second about weather. Tell us a little bit about what are the big trends you see in revenue cycle right now? What are you seeing?
Well, I think they all the trends right now are moving in tandem. And essentially, what I see primarily is movement with transparency for our patients and helping educate our patients what their out-of-pockets are prior to service. So this allows them to make good decision-making as far as what services, the timing of their services, and how they want to have those services provided to them. But I think also within that is helping us develop transparency for the patients, but then figuring out a way to reduce some of those costs that the patients are enduring. So really doing some of that work that has predominantly been handled at the back end of the revenue cycle, actually moving that work to the front end of the revenue cycle. Again, providing estimates to the patients, doing some of that pre-collect on the front end for those patients and reducing some of those costs, which ultimately then help us with some of our pop health contracts so that we can start to do some of that reduction in cost. I think one of the other trends that really is pushing this is how do we leverage technology to help us engage with the patients better and to reduce some of those costs that we are enduring overall. So how can we leverage artificial intelligence? How can we meet the patient where they want to be met and give them, in some respect, a Amazon experience, if you will, so that they have everything at their fingertips within an app and they can do that estimate on the front end. They can do that financial clearance. They can understand what their opportunities are in order to pay for some of these systems and really to put that on the forefront to the patient and help them engage with our organization differently, which also then has that digital footprint in how to then do we engage with them into their patient care and then ultimately get paid for that care when it's done in a digital platform. And then I think the other trend really ties into all of this as well is with our workforce and how do we provide not only that remote care, but then also how do we allow our employees to work from home overall and utilizing some of the technology that we have implemented already due to COVID, but then keep that technology sustainable. So our folks can have a positive work from home experience. And from an organizational standpoint, we can have a productive work from home platform as well.
Is the transition to remote care made it hard to bill for services? What's been the impact on billing for services, revenue cycle? And do you anticipate changes as some, you know, payers allow it to continue? Medicare waiver may or may not expire on it. What do you expect, and has it made it challenging for collections and revenue cycle?
Well, I think some of the challenges from a revenue cycle standpoint primarily is this shift happened very quickly where we needed to shift our care quickly into that virtual world. However, our payers were not necessarily always set up and ready to take that new reimbursement format, with CMS stating that they would cover for these services at a face-to-face level. Most of our commercial payers took the same stance. However, their systems were not set up to allow for that right away, which then, of course, increases our denials and all of those types of things. Plus the rapid movement of regulations that came down as far as testing and reimbursement for testing and lack of cost sharing and all of those things. Those have all had a challenging impact on our organizations for sure. But what I do foresee for the future is absolutely, I think that these virtual platforms are going to continue. I think it's been very beneficial to our patients, as well as our providers, and our payers are starting to see that. I know in Minnesota, our payers are waiting to see what CMS is going to do with the expansion of the waivers, and we do foresee those expansions happening. However, the one area that I'm not confident in is that those reimbursement levels that we're used to getting in today's world is going to continue and be sustainable. So I do foresee that even if many of the CMS waivers continue, that we will see a decrease in what that reimbursement level will be. And then that will become a challenge for us on how do we actually handle that when you're used to receiving a certain reimbursement level and now it's decreased and your volumes for in-person are decreasing. That makes it challenging for organizations for sure.
And take a moment to talk about transparency. New CMS regulations or executive orders, how challenging will this be for health systems and hospitals to comply with and so forth?
Yeah, there definitely are some organizations in the country that are a little bit further ahead as far as the transparency, but I think overall it is going to be a challenge. And there's definite fear on how that information and data is going to be used amongst our payers for sure. But I think the biggest thing is, I think there needs to be an education component that happens with our patients and having them really understand. And we all know how complex billing can be and how things can change once the patient walks in the door or has that visit with the provider and how some of those codes might change. So, I think it's going to be challenging meeting expectations from the patient perspective, but also then just the timeliness of getting this information out to the patients and doing that upfront education with them is going to be very impactful to make it successful overall. But it is extremely challenging. It takes a lot of work to get those prices out there, to get those contracts aligned and all of those types of things. So right now it is very challenging for all organizations, and we're all trying to be creative to figure out the right way to do it and to make it impactful for the patient for sure.
Right, and you mentioned a fascinating thing, that it's every payer is a separate negotiation, and yeah. You know, there's been this whole long-term game in healthcare to make sure your charge master is kind of higher than what your payer negotiated contracts are, so you actually get whatever your payer negotiated contracts are, and somebody doesn't rebound to your usual customary rate. So how will that be managed? And you don't have to get into detail on it, but you still do have, not you as a system, but generally, as you get into this transparency world and deal with payers that are a large percentage of commercial reimbursement, this does create some challenges, doesn't it? And not talking about your system, not getting you into a spot for legal fights with your payers, but just generally that does create a problem, doesn't it, or a challenge?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, it does create a challenge for sure in that, to your point, we all have different negotiated rates, different fees. We in Minnesota, obviously, you know, we want to be respectful of our competitors and who we have out there. But, even as I try to explain to my own family how the reimbursement world sits and how our contracts sit, and we are a large organization and we have various fee schedules throughout based on our practices. And it makes it very complex and convoluted. And to explain it even to our own family members, they become very complex and go, but I don't understand. And so now we're going to put this information on a website or what have you, and have patients try to understand that. It makes it very difficult and very confusing to them, which is what we want to eliminate, is the confusion. So we as organizations have to be prepared to be able to handle the perception for our patients, but yet continuing
right.
To work.
Right, that's a high charge, Master, but they know they're – but they know that nobody's really paying exactly that charge master anyway. So we're in a fascinating
Correct.
Situation. And then at the same time, do you want to, you don't want your charge master to be the front page of the newspaper and say, oh my God, the prices are so high, when we realize nobody's
exactly.
really paying exactly those prices anyways. And at the same time,
right.
we don't want them so low that it drives in all of our pricing and there's no margin to invest in the system. In the
right.
family member,
right.
when a family member gets a medical bill, and, you know, I view you as sort of on the revenue cycle side. Of course, in my house, when we get a medical bill, you know, I will – sometimes it gets paid right away through the health savings account. Sometimes it gets thrown away, and we wait till the third or fourth bill. In the home of a revenue cycle leader, how is that handled? Do you pay every bill immediately when it comes because you view it as almost like the church of revenue cycle? Or do you act a little bit more reformed, like people like me, where sometimes it gets paid right away and sometimes, you know, it might take a little bit?
Well, I think it's a little bit different from a revenue cycle leader, because typically for myself, and I'll speak for myself, I know my policy. I know how my policy is going to pay and what it's going to look like. But I also have the inside track, because I know what our contract looks like. And I know that I also have an HRA and the time frame it takes for all of those components to go through and when the HRA is going to pay for it. So I may take a little more lax approach because I understand the timing a little bit better. I've had family members who have said, okay, what do I do with this? And helping them understand, match your statements with your EOBs, you know, work through this process. What other things do you need to consider? What other things do you need to think about? But it's amazing how many folks don't necessarily know their policies and understand how things are going to be paid and understand what a deductible and a co-insurance and what that means from the overall. And so those are things that typically is where the explanation comes into play a little bit more, is, well, why do I owe this if my costs weren't so high? Well, your deductible is your deductible. You know, you're going to pay it.
And so, as a summary, when I get my bill, and so, Sharon, I've got this from you on record. I'm free to throw it out, correct?
Sure.
No, I'm just kidding. Sharon, I want to thank you for joining us today. You were incredibly informative about some of the issues facing revenue cycle, whether it's on, you know, remote care, whether it's what's going on with these transparency regulations, and some of the very, you know, the politicians make it very simple, you know, great transparency, but in reality it causes, I mean, and there's greatness to that, there's positives to that, but there's also lots of complications to it. And you've really been helpful in helping explain a lot of these issues today. And we appreciate it greatly, you joining the Becker Self-Care Podcast, Sharon. Just magnificent. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.